doesn't work.
Brown 45! Brown 45!
You are listening to Any Given Sunday Australia.
Yes, hello and welcome to the Any Given Sunday Australia podcast, the number one podcast in three households, a couple of studios, probably had an extra studio in there today, Gridiron Australia head office, NFL Australia head office, all around the world, huge in the States now. They tell me I don't have all the stats, but I'm just going by what they tell me. Hope everyone enjoyed. For those that celebrate, happy Easter. For those that don't, happy long weekend. Joining us, as always, down in his basement, back in the basement, Ash, Tim Carty, AGSAU, TC24. How are you, mate?
Good, brother. Yeah, coming off a big Easter break. Good. I think two of my kids turned into actual chocolate eggs. They just ate that much chocolate. But, really good break. Had a good time and good to be back with you legends in the studio.
Yeah, awesome. And ask Danny Webb, AGSAU, in your non-basement that is always where it is exactly need to be. How are you, mate?
This is my guest wing. I say every time, it's my guest wing of the house.
Guest wing? Jesus.
There's loads of guest wings in these Fitzroy houses. Anyway, mate, I'm really good. I had a great Easter. Worked the whole time, but it was still lovely to hang out with the crew.
I will beep out exactly where you live, so that's all right. So you don't get all that fan mail coming straight to where you are. Joining us on this special pre-draft edition of Any Given Sunday, a man that just told us how many players he's been watching, and I don't know when you actually have time to sleep. Joining us from, well, you can tell us where you're from in case I'm not allowed to actually say, Big Loz Haresh, our ESPN, friend of the show. How are you, mate?
From the phenomenal Harbour Town City, the first state. Sydney, New South Wales, if we really want to get into it. We don't need to start the mudslinging across the border just yet. But no, I'm doing great. It's draft season. It's when I sleep. I sleep less than I should. And, you know, some tape will, you know, some college prospect tape will aid sleep a little better than others. You know, when Caleb Williams breaks, you know, six tackles, spins out and fires 50 yards downfield to a receiver that wasn't open 5 meters ago, but now is because of his placement. That'll keep you awake a little more, but I love draft season. It's truly NFL tragic time to just dive in. And I think it's just a great way to kind of refresh yourself on who's coming into the league and what the league could look like. Some names that are going to populate throughout rosters with their stars or just prospects you see down 2-3 years from now that you kind of liked in the middle rounds and they're playing key roles. It's a nice way to introduce yourself. And I think, I love this time of year. So it's great to be on with you boys and talk a little draft, talk a little, you know, spring football and everything else that's going on in this beautiful 12-month-a-year sport that we devote ourselves to.
Would this, I know you have the Brekkie show and stuff like that when the actual season comes around, but is this your busiest time of year?
From a content standpoint, probably not. But from a viewing standpoint, I think I watch more hours now than I would during the season. Because during the season, you try and watch every single game and you go over things and you read and you look at stats and numbers and insights. But in terms of just the span of players, I think from a player standpoint, this feels like the most I watch. And I enjoy that because it's a different time pressure. I don't watch college football during the NFL season much. Here and there, maybe. Obviously, when you get to playoffs, you tune in a little more. But just from a time standpoint, and I don't think I'm alone. There's a lot of people that work in sports media or NFL media, if they're lucky to, that don't get to watch a lot of college gear throughout the season, and they tune in at a later point. So I kind of come to the party late. I'm not really up to date with all the big college football season narratives from different programs. You obviously know who the big contenders are and how the playoffs shake out, the championship game and all that, but you're aware of some of the big names. But it's nice to kind of come in with fresh eyes, and I don't have a tragic college football team that I go for, so there's a bit of removed bias than perhaps when I watch the all 22 on some team from North Texas.
That's surprising you don't have a team. I thought for sure you'd have one.
I have a soft spot for a team, and it actually, and happily now, it extends out into the March Madness tournament, which of course you can watch on ESPN in Australia. but NC State holds a soft spot for me. It may have been the first game that perhaps I was back in my university days that I was invested in, the NC State Wolfpack, I believe, against Arizona.
Sorry, Arizona State. Yeah.
And a young quarterback, mobile, slightly undersized, real cannon on him, but could do some damage on the ground, was running around and helped that investment, shall we say. And that was one Russell Wilson back before he went to the MLB, Colorado Rockies draft pick, I believe, and then on to Wisconsin before getting into the NFL draft. So that was probably my first. So there's always a little soft spot for the Wolfpack. Throw it up, and good to see them on an absolute Cinderella run in March Madness as well, with a powerful man operating in the low post, who is getting looks from NFL scouts. If you listen to some insiders, with his unique blend of size and agility, and
Kareem Abdul, they call him.
Nah, he's an Indiana player. It's JB,
DJ.
Oh, yeah.
DJ Burns.
DJ Burns.
It's like a four letter.
DJ Burns. And it's, little love for NC State Wolfpack, but it's just nice to familiarize yourself with where the programs are. You hear coaching names that you haven't heard from a while. And you know, when you get to fourth down, you're more likely not to hear an Aussie name punting the football, as such as our presence at the collegiate level.
All right, there's a couple of things that we touched on last week, but we said we're going to leave it for our expert when he came on, and that is you.
Oh, so when does he turn? Do I need to hop off? Have you got a max of four? Well, I need to leave the screen.
Yes. We can squeeze one more.
I actually don't know what our max. We might have a max of five. I actually don't know. But we're going to tick off a couple of little things before we let you just go, you know, hell for leather with draft and signings chat. Sure. The first thing that us AFL watchers don't quite understand, so we have to go to the lesser like of the NFL, rugby league watcher and yourself. The hip drop tackle. I have heard a couple of shows that are a bit bewildered why they're even bringing this rule in, but checking over your X or your Twitter, however you want to say it, you're quite a believer, maybe, that this is a teachable movement and that it needs to be dropped. Is that right?
Yeah, just going off our history here in Australia with the hip drop tackle, and hey, let's duck down to the fine state of Victoria for a second. You've got guys like Cam Smith, Melbourne Storm, Queensland, Australia legend. I'm not sure how much he's well known in Victoria, such as the Melbourne Storm, but we'll see. But he's on record talking about, you know, some of the genesis of the hip drop tackle in when it came into rugby league. It's because our footy codes here are continuous, right? Whether it's they're all different, rugby union, rugby league, AFL, I throw football, the world game, soccer in there as well. And we all get up and about when someone calls something a rugby kick when it's actually something more found in a drop punt in AFL. But in rugby league, because it is a continuous sport, it was brought in partially as a delaying tactic to slow down the pace of the ruck. That's a big thing in rugby league, to slow down, control the pace of the ruck. If you do have kind of a classic one-on-one tackle, you can at times you can be asked to move on and allow the play ball to happen really quickly, which is obviously not advantageous for an NRL defense. Okay, that's the backstory. You can hear much smarter NRL historians, players, journos, reporters provide insight on that. But that's how we know it came in. And we also know that it had a massive injury rate and came under fire in rugby league, and it was dealt with and legislation comes in. So we know that that injury exists. We know it's a taught tactic. We know what its background is. Is it the furor that's come from from many parts of, you know, NFL media and fandom and players we've seen rebut against this, is that, you know, the rules against defense have certainly become tougher over the past 20 years, even though we're coming off some really good scoring seasons for the defensive side of things. You know, scoring has been down of late. Obviously, rules have more often than not helped out the offense. And you think about things like, you know, the body weight issue when you're sacking a quarterback is so hard to... That talk about something that's hard to teach players, you know, how to manage how you fall on top of a quarterback while you're in the art of putting them on the ground, because if you don't put them on the ground and they stay up, then the play continues.
They use the word unweighting yourself, don't they?
So the unweighting yourself versus the body weight is going to cause a certain reaction. And hey, that's how they've put it into words. We'll see how it's adjudicated. But actually getting that technique where you wrap around the hips, you do unweight yourself, but you kind of, you do swing, you drop your weight and you swing, and you really crash your body and your lower half of your body into the lower half of the ball carrier and cause him to instantly drop. The NFL Various members of the NFL operation came out and spoke about how it's, you know, up to 25 times the injury rate versus a normal tackle. So that is something that stands out. We saw the injury rates at home. We've seen it in the NFL. We've seen, there's a number of guys, you know, Tony Pollard and Mark Andrews are certainly two of the high profile ones. Dak Prescott, it happened to, he didn't get injured from it, but it was pretty scary when it did happen. It's happened to a number of players. And I understand it is a way to get a ball carrier down. That is how it hasn't been brought into the NFL, hasn't been coached in the NFL as a delaying tactic because they have 40 seconds before the next play and they have to reset the line of scrimmage and everything like that. It was a way to bring ball carriers down and you're not attacking the head and you're not in the head and the neck, which they've gone so hard into protecting. But this particular technique, it has been taught. It can be untaught. It's not a traditional way of tackling someone. I know people can watch a highlight, especially in real fast time, and see, oh, look, he grabbed him around the waist and got him to the ground. What's wrong with that? But when you go into the particular movements that go in, and it's not every tackle that happens around the hips, and it's also not every hip drop tackle. It is when that pendulum swinging, this particular phrase they use, when that motion goes into the back of the legs, when that occurs, that's what they're going to be looking at. So I'm all for it coming out. There's plenty of great ways to tackle. There's some phenomenal tacklers in the NFL. I think of like the likes of Quincy Williams of the New York Jets, who is one of the finest tacklers in any football code across the world. The man tackles in a way that the likes of Brian Lima and Brian O'Driscoll, I'm just naming good rugby playing, great rugby playing Brians at this point, would appreciate. And if you don't know about Brian Lima, the tackler, Samoan great, go on YouTube and type that in and see some of the hits that he put on. Great form. You do see that. But, man, there are some – this is one form I think we all, as football-loving guys that we are from what we grew up with, we see some of the way the defensive backs and cornerbacks do that kind of – that roll with their shoulder and their head into the ankles of a ball runner out in the flat, a ball carrier out in the flat. That makes me wince every time because it just exposes that head and neck area. So, look, there are tackling issues that there's multiple – it's a dangerous sport. Not all techniques perfect, but this is one that – has come under the spotlight recently. And from our own history, we know where its background comes from. And I'm absolutely keen to see it out of the sport. And I have faith that the quality of coaching exists in world sport and in football to have different forms and more traditional forms of tackling take hold, because in the hip drop, the results are it's a cliche, the proof's in the pudding, but the results are there and they're undeniable, and we don't need to see star players going down from a tackle, from a technique that, as I've said, has been taught and can be untaught.
I think you're right. And like, I think it's a tactic used by smaller guys to help bring down bigger guys, I think, because it is a very effective tackle, T-Mac might have employed. Like, so we play AFL footy ourselves, myself and T-Mac, and it's sort of a 360 tackling game, but those runs from behind, it is definitely a tactic you use to just drop your weight and you can get a bigger guy down. So you're very aware when you're doing it. So I think you're absolutely right. Like, it's super uncoachable, or, you know, very easy to coach against doing it, because you're very aware when you're doing it. So
look, I didn't go to a rugby powerhouse in I can't remember if we've joked about this when I've been on the show before. I didn't go to a rugby powerhouse school in Sydney. I went to an independent school that was more known for, you know, second languages, arts and music than it was as a sporting powerhouse. We got a rugby program going in the middle of school, and we had some really good coaches. Our head of sport at the time was an RA certified coach, Rugby Australia, or ARU back then, I guess. And we went through all this process and we were playing games. And I know, you know, I've been trying to tackle someone. I'm like, this guy won't just get down. And I know that I dropped my weight.
Yeah,
as a means of getting him down. And I wasn't one of the smallest guys on the paddock. In saying that, though, there is a difference between dropping your weight, which is where everyone saw the unweighted phrase and really grabbed onto that, and swinging yourself pendulum-like into the back of the legs and causing those ankles and knees to get trapped and put under that ridiculous amount of weight and pressure, and very sudden as well. Mm-hmm. Right, it's an effective way of stopping someone. It stops their momentum suddenly. That can lead to injury.
Yeah.
Do we know yet, I know it's still early days, do we know yet if there is a penalty that's going to be enforced in-game or post-game from this?
So they've said personal foul flag, 15 yards, automatic first down. But you've also heard some of the talk in and around this that this is going, that we do not be surprised if this is heavily handed out on Monday in terms of fines. If the swing is more towards day after, a couple of days after, 48 hours, we review the tape, that's a fine as opposed to an in-game penalty. And people can say, oh, that's not fair. You're fining someone for, you know, it wasn't clear enough to call it a foul in the game, but, you know, how are you coming in and finding someone? But it's not my money. So there's a degree that, you know, I need to think about that when I'm talking about this, you know, tens of thousands of dollars going here and there. But if this is adjudicated after the fact to start with, honestly, like we saw with the lowering of the helmet for ball carriers, which we saw for running backs, and that's largely been an after the fact with some very interesting applications, I should say. And I do understand there's that inherent, someone who has complained about the quality of refereeing at times, there's that inherent step back, do we really want to be putting more on the referees? Referee's plate. I totally agree that. And that's why I think it's better that this is handled after the fact, because the goal isn't, at least for me, at least the way I view this, and maybe that's a little too, maybe I'm being a little too naive about it. The goal of this is to get this tactic out of the game, not to give chunk yardage to the offense. So that's what I would hope that we do see, that there's a learning curve here and the end result is coaching this out. You know, if you have to punish it after the fact, okay, we look at that, but coaching this out of the game and getting it out of the game rather than, you know, a fair argument from defensive players stacking more of the rule book against us.
And I think as much as a fine after the fact would hurt, I think the players would probably agree and prefer that method as opposed to, like you said, losing big chunks of yardage mid-game. They'd probably prefer to see it phased out with this fining tactic over the first few rounds. Hopefully people learn and then, you know, it's kind of gone. It's a non-issue and we move on.
I mean, how often do we hear about this helmet, the lowering of the crown of the helmet rule for the runners? Like, it is very rare. I want to say it's the swivel is the phrase they use. I said pivot before, trying to talk about that pendulum motion. It's the swivel hip drop. They're really focusing in on that when you do that content.
It's obvious when someone does that.
It really is. Like, there was one on, I think it's on Geno Smith, where he's running out of bounds. One, it's just a late hit in general because he's smoked over the sideline. But you see, you get a really good camera angle of that drop of the weight, unweighting, trigger for a lot of fans out there. But you see the tackler's body and lower body weight just swing into Geno and trap. And thankfully, it didn't end up in a serious injury, but it's not hard to see how it does. But I think there's a lot of understanding for the instant rebuttal when it comes to more being put on referees that are already under fire, more rules that make it tougher for the defense. People saying, you know, oh, we're making football soft. This isn't, and my plea is that, one, let's look at how it's adjudicated, because I agree we don't want to stack more on the referees in game and how the penalties or the punishment is applied. And two, is that this is not OG football where they're looking to get out of the game. This is not old school football when I was young, good old fashioned hitting that they're trying to get out of the game. This is something that is a more modern element, a newer element with some disastrous consequences.
Yeah, fair enough. I think going back to Carr saying that I play, there's a lot of times that I've jumped on someone's back and my feet can't actually touch the floor. So I'm not dropping my own weight. It's just that I can't reach the floor. That's not my fault. The only thing before we do move on, Loz, if you say after the fact, there's been talk out of the owners' meeting that they want to bring in the secondary ref, the upstairs ref, a lot more. Could it be that way that we adjudicate this? Because I feel like it's a very subjective, you know, one ref might see it and be like, I don't think he did drop his weight. The next might be like, no, he definitely did. So having that New York influence coming in and being like, no, because they want to have it at every ground now and everyone.
Well, yeah, they did say they're expanding the rules of the whichever way you want to call it, the replay assistant, Sky Judge, however it's termed on X, formerly known as Twitter, it's Twitter. However it's verbalized on Twitter or Threads that day by the NFL literati. But yeah, they're looking at some of those penalties and some of those flags in certain parts of the game. But look, on that point, I actually think, and look, again, sound like a real fan of NFL officiating, which is it's not always been the case. But I actually think one of the better things that eventuated last season was how swift and smooth that operation with the expedited reviews was. We weren't talking about it a lot, but, you know, in amongst all the, you know, question marks over different penalties and, you know, we talked about the you know, body weight landing on top of quarterbacks. And so I thought some of the quick fire corrections that official made and that operation made and how quickly it happened, because that's always been the argument, right? Oh, you review every single play and it's going to slow down. And it really, really didn't. So I actually, any more application of that, if it's going to operate that quickly, that is correcting some of these pivotal things, because look, whether your team benefits from it or not, in the moment, I'm sure you're happy. Having the final 2 minutes, having the final 5 minutes of pivotal season-defining, tenure-defining, job-defining games, be flipped on a blatantly incorrect flag is something that in the grand scheme of things we don't enjoy. And I think it helps the referees and makes their job easier. And I'm not, despite what I said just then about being for this
rule, the refs and
this rule coming in, I am not for making the referees' jobs harder, because whilst we get frustrated and criticize and get angry and say, how could you miss that? I'm not putting my hand up to be an NFL official anytime soon. It's a hard gig.
And give him a full-time job. That's the rest. All the conversation. Give him a full-time job.
I'm all for job creation in the sports industry.
Creation, baby. But if we use that technology, it just takes away all those arguments about, oh, ref screwed us, all that sort of stuff. So,
and those are the type of arguments that you catch yourself making and you let your fandom get into you, and they're not fun. You feel like you have
I'm that guy.
It's like you've got to get it. You feel like you've got to get it off your chest, but you don't like how it sounds coming out. It's like so you're having a discussion at home and or amongst friends, and like you really want to. You feel like you're being unjustly you're being unjustly served in this argument or debate. You shoot something off that you just have to get off your chest, and you're like, I sounded terrible saying that. Really sounded awful. It's not a good look for me.
All right, before Loz absolutely blows a cranium about these refs that he hates all of a sudden, another rule change. Another rule change for you. It's from the kickoffs. Karts is our local expert, but we'll throw it over to you, Loz. What are your thoughts on the new kickoff rules? Obviously, it's taken that, I think it's XFL kind of kickoff, the formation that they're going to do. I personally, without seeing it too much, like the sound of it. I think it's going to bring a lot more punt or kickoff returns, but you're our expert, mate. What are we thinking? What are we looking at?
Before I handball it to Kurt, see, that was a, there you go, footy one for you guys,
no,
hey?
No, there you go. That.
Like I didn't grow up as a massive Swans fan. literally made a plugger reference in the office today, but anyway, moving on. Look, clearly where they got into, the rules they tried to put in place had an adverse reaction and response from what we actually saw in the product. The kickoff has been massively nullified. It was a non-event. It was people saying it's the most boring playing football. You know, we know the owners want to keep it in because it is one of the moments where the foot actually does meet the ball in this game of football, which is generally played with hands. But we know they want to keep it in. I'm all for it. I think it's one of the benefits of some of these spring football leagues that we've seen is rule experimentation and some creative ideas put into practice, because the NFL is often not the fastest operation to move and likes to see precedent, likes to see examples. And I think, you know, look, they're trying to reduce the high speed collisions of players on those big long run-ups, and you have them close to the line of scrimmage while still promoting more returns. And we do want to see the return in the game. When you look at think of draft prospects that are coming out, Cooper DeJean out of Iowa, who is absolutely electric on special teams, and you want to see him have that ability at the next level. You know, I think, you know, as soon as this rule got announced, all of a sudden the Cordarrelle Patterson rumors started up again, unsurprisingly. So I'm for it. We'll see. It's you know, I believe most of this is on a one-year basis. The thing I would have liked to see with it is, I think there's a big difference between the high-speed collisions when these players get a big long run-up off kickoff than when you see it on an onside kick. The onside kick rules are standing put other than they occur in the fourth quarter. But the formation of those onside kick and a period in the fourth quarter, the formation of those onside kicks without having a run on, that still makes them so ineffective. We saw the success rate absolutely crater when they brought that in. And I think if you're already having to announce that you're going for an onside kick, I think the kicking team that is looking to recover, I think they should have the ability to have some sort of run-up and momentum to bring the balance of that play back in, because it is an exciting play. Okay, we're not going to get the surprise onside kick anymore, and we've seen some of those in the biggest moments of seasons and the biggest stages of all, but if we're going to have them, I'd like to see them a little more competitive, because the success rate of them has created. But on the grander scheme of how they're trying to address and keep kickoffs in the game, I'm all for this, and hopefully we do see some of those explosive plays back in the game, because it is such a it's a bit of a buzzkill after a touchdown to start a game, when you just go, you kind of got one head, you know, you got your head, we only have one head, but you got one head looking into the room.
We're not that far down.
There's not going to be any of those jokes. No jokes about any states or anything like that, but you've got, you know, your body's in the kitchen getting breakfast ready and your head's looking at like, do I need to check on this kickoff or is this just going to, okay, it's just going to go out the back. That's not a fun way to start a game and it's not a fun way to start a drive. So hopefully this brings a little more explosiveness back in and I'm open-minded about it. And look, it's a one-year trial and ideally it's 12 months from now and we're sitting here talking about, you know, league owners' meetings have just ratified this and it's now, it's, you know, we brought the fun back into kickoffs.
Hell yeah.
Cart's being our expert. Do you have anything to add to that, mate, or are you happy with
He's very generous. Nah, Loz hit the nail on the head. It's all about reducing those big high-speed collisions. So what they've done, the kicker stays at their 35.
Yep.
The cover team moves up to the opposition 40-yard line. The return team, minimum of nine, have to be between the 30, 35, and then you can have two returners back. And they've got a landing zone. If the ball is going in there, you can't fair catch it, you got to return it. So further to that point of trying to get more returns happening, there's still the ability for touchbacks, but it'll come up to the 30-yard line now as opposed to the 25. So whether that's going to, you know, affect the decision of the teams too much, 5 yards, some people are saying it's not enough. Some people are saying if they went to the 35 and 10, like that's too much. So like you said, it's a 1 year, almost like a trial interim period. I think it's going to be good. It's going to increase the number of returns. It's going to increase the stock of special teams guys and returners, particularly like you mentioned. So I think it's ticking a lot of boxes early and then they can tweak it a little bit after this 12 months if they need to. It's getting rid of that dead play. We were just saying touchback after touchback. It's just pointless. Like, why are we doing this?
The Super Bowl having all touchbacks was just
zero returns.
It's just a massive showcase game and a massive showcase of where the return, the kickoff,
like, it's
returns
are awesome for the kickers. They can just line up and absolutely boom it through through the end zone. Like, that's cool. Go your hardest. But now you can be a bit strategic. Try and land it in that drop zone. And like, hey, they got to return it.
The examples that we've seen from the XFL that have made their way onto social media and you see them shared around where there was, you know, a bit of a reverse play happening with those two guys at the back there, allowed further back in the landing zone. Okay, it's not the first return punt or kick that we've seen in American football where there's a reverse being played, but you can see how those kind of switches and those kind of sweeps could happen, that action could happen, given that you do have, as you said, there's nine up in that setup zone there between the 30 and the 35, and then you've got two guys back and how you could work on those formations. And it's exciting. And the fact that some of the special teams coordinators are involved in this as well, I like that. I like that it's not just coming as a top-down approach that you do have. And I believe Bones Fossil, Cowboys special teams coordinator, was one of the guys in there who was known.
Of course he is.
Sometimes the cap, but more you know him from his Rams days. With some of the really creative stuff he did on special teams. The fact that that type of mind, and he wasn't alone, as some of the expertise that they're leaning on in the practical application of this is really interesting. And they're looking at this over the next couple of months as well, what verbiage could be tweaked ahead of further meetings later in the American summer.
Yeah. Well, and it keeps special teams relevant too. And like, special teams can break a game open. So it's awesome. Keeps them relevant, keeps them in the game. So I think, I think it's a really
Bears fans haven't had a lot to crow about over the years, but the fact that they got Devin to watch Hester. Devin Hester do what he did in the Super Bowl in that moment off the kickoff, I mean, that's iconic. He's iconic. And you'd hate that element to be removed because it's, you know, we've just said goodbye to the New England Patriots dynasty, where so much of it, one of the great constants of that dynasty was the attention to detail and expertise that they had in the third phase of football, special teams.
Mm-hmm. The special teams has cost the Packers over the years, especially with onside kicks. So I'm happy to get rid of it altogether. Let's just go straight from. Nah, all good. All right, Danny, you didn't have anything to say. You were pretty quiet during that little bit. We've got a bit for you later on to talk about. So
watching the experts as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let them talk. All right, the last little thing before we get into drafts and signings is you've spoken about spring ball. Those that are all over it, there is new spring ball happening currently. It is a combination of the leagues, the XFL and the USFL. They've creatively gone with the UFL.
Synergy.
They're getting paid the big bucks, so they've gone, yep, let's just call it that. It is actually, it's just started week one. We thought we'd just give it a little bit of a plug. Exciting, mainly because I think it gives another opportunity. There's a lot of Australians in there. Mm-hmm. We've had in week one, Jake Bates of the Michigan Panthers. He's not an Aussie, but he banged home a 64-yard field goal winner. His first meaningful kick since high school, which is awesome to think about. But the holder was an Aussie, Brock Miller. So I feel like it's a unit, that whole thing. So huge shout out to him. And one that you put on your Twitter/X was Brad Wing. You know, spent 4 years, 76 games or something it was in the NFL, but now over there playing. And I don't know if you actually confirmed, is he the first Australian to throw a touchdown?
That's still going through the annals of football history, but I believe he's the first Australian to throw a touchdown pass, full bottle touchdown pass in professional American football. So nice see for Brad Wing, who is, you know, he's we see where pro kick is these days and we see where the Aussie element is. You know, Brad was one of the earlier Australians over there playing at LSU, the SEC. He had it's still a penalty that really riles up LSU football fans. He had a great fake punt and he took it to the house and he gave us a little celebration before he got to the end zone and was
flagged. Take off him, didn't it? It's like,
yeah, I know. They flagged him for it, which is, you know, that it's still, I think it grinds Aussie gears and it grinds LSU Tiger fans as well. But, you know, it was actually lovely last season as well, because he did spend quite a few years with the Steelers there and they got in a bit of a pinch at puncher and brought him back for a little Brad Wing renaissance in Pittsburgh. So great to see that from the now veteran punter Brad Wing. Remember when he was buddies, you know, he was bleach blonde hair, young guy out of LSU, mates with OBJ during those LSU teams and those LSU years. So I'm all for the nailing this down, because you've had signs of promise with different forms of spring football, different leagues that have come and gone and risen and fallen. And I'm all for it, one, because it's more football, but it is those pathways. And we're going to see talent emerge. You know, we're going to see backup quarterbacks we're going to see guys get backup quarterback jobs in the NFL or third string quarterbacks in the NFL because there's a shortage of quarterback play that exists, who are getting to showcase themselves here. We're going to see special teams. When you look at, I promise this is not going to be a show where I turn up and glorify any Dallas Cowboys operation, but Kevontae Turpin was someone that obviously had a really strong role in spring football and then comes on and has a really successful run since signing with the Dallas Cowboys. You're going to see, you mentioned, you know, kickers that haven't kicked since high school or former soccer players that are giving it a whirl. I could go again to the Cowboys. There with,
wasn't, with yeah, I was going to say, wasn't there. The Cowboys?
Yeah, kicker. I could go with old Butter Aubrey there, the man who strikes a football like Freddie Couple strikes a driver off the first tee. But you're seeing guys that come from different pathways, whether that's Australian, whether that's multi-sport athletes, whether that's European players or from any place around the world, any continent around the world where football's being played. It's another pipeline, and hopefully it just has the stability, the business structure, the organizational structure. And I think there's promising starts there to carry this on and be a consistent part of the football year, because it's a, you know, you finish the combine, you go into deep draft study, but to have, you know, live action football going on throughout and highlights like an Aussie punter throwing a touchdown pass, we didn't mention, to a 300 plus pound.
To a center.
The third read, you've got,
what about his yards after catch?
You got Wade Phillips there saying, yeah, that was his third read. He got through his progressions. It's one thing to say, you know, it's a punter throwing a touchdown pass. He went through progressions.
Yes.
You know,
stepped up into the pocket, away from the pressure, bang.
I joked around. There's quarterbacks in this draft that might not throw over the middle, and highly ranked quarterbacks in this NFL draft class that might not throw over the middle as well as Brad Wing. That, heck, they might be starting quarterbacks that from teams that some of us are fans of that don't throw over the middle that well, but we won't take any swings like that.
He's talking about you, Cass.
No,
definitely not talking about me.
I had a feeling.
I'm definitely not talking about Jordan Love. I'll spoil that one off the top.
Just on that, like, it's such a great point. Like, obviously, the UFL is bringing that. Jake Bates, the lad who kicked this 64-yard field goal winner, has been contacted by multiple teams, rumored to be the Lions, Packers, really? And the Rams. So, like,
one week.
64 yards. Anytime you're bombing it, you know, splitting the pipes from 64 yards, it's going to get attention, especially because, you know, kicking woes have become more highlighted with the PAT moving back. And that's always going to get eyeballs raised. And you know, you're seeing, you know, YouTube content creators, get their chance and
destroying. Destroying, yeah.
You know, taking their journeys to different, like, that's engaging and, you know, not to think of it purely from a media, you know, professional standpoint, but, you know, it's a different season of content and it's more accessible and that's absolutely impactful for younger demographics as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be good. I reckon they've finally got a good little mixture going, and instead of competing against two, come together, be one, get the Rock involved. It'll be all right. All right, let's get on to the main part. We've spoken a lot of dribble to get to this far, so I can't imagine I'll be getting to bed anytime soon. But the first one I need to speak about is for you, Danny boy. Hassan Reddick has left your Birds. What the hell is going on at the Birdcage, mate?
Oh, so, yeah, I was left for, I can't remember now, but it was like a 2025 draft pick, potentially third round, depending on his sacks, will go drop to the second round. But, like, to me, that's not enough. That is not enough for Hassan Reddick. Heartbreak over here, that's for sure. One of my favorite players. So,
and then sending him off to the Jets, just them getting
better and better.
The Jets have made some major signings. Like, you know, this offseason, they've like really shored up their offensive line to try and give Aaron Rodgers everything they can. And now just trying to even build their defense even further. Like, they're having more than a crack this year. They're trying to give it all. They're trying to give it all, like, as much as they promised that we'll get in last year. They're trying to really bring it this year.
Well, I think with Hassan Reddick, pass rush is what you heard when he arrived. You know, having some breakout seasons before he got to Philadelphia and absolutely delivering as an Eagle, but he also impacted on the run game. Like, there's plenty of evidence and snaps and great tape out there where he did make plays against the run, more of a two-way player than perhaps was advertised at times. And it's interesting. It's not a trade, but not for the first time, we've seen pass rushers literally switch teams. We saw Jonathan Grenard go from Houston and be signed by the Minnesota Vikings, while the Houston Texans signed former Minnesota Vikings Danielle Hunter. Same position, different age, slightly different salary, but both high-end players. And now we've seen Bryce Huff lands with the Philadelphia Eagles. And then in a later move, that's where, you know, Reddick goes and replaces some of the snaps we would have seen from Huff in previous seasons. But I think once that Huff signing happened, because it didn't scream as an obvious position of need, and you get veteran presence like Brandon Graham ringing up again. I'm not having, that's not Groundhog Day in my head, right? He did ring up again, didn't he?
Yeah.
Can't quit. Yeah. So you got Brandon Graham ringing up, and when the Josh Sweat trade rumors died back a little bit, we'll see what the future holds there. It felt like there were a lot of bodies there, and Reddick, obviously, I mean, I'm 35 sitting here talking about who's getting old, but is into the latter half, certainly, of his career, and perhaps latter third and maybe even more of his career, still a very effective player. And we know, like, Howie Roseman doesn't stand still. You can love the moves, you can hate the moves, you can grade him now, you can grade him later, but Howie doesn't stay still. So not entirely surprising to see that, but it's funny because it is, obviously, Huff is younger than Hassan Reddick, and now we're getting another, not aging, but another up there Pro Bowl talent on that Jets roster that, on paper, if everybody's healthy, it's going to be one of the great dad's army runs that we've seen in the NFL, but it does feel like, you know, if the injury bug hits some of those over 30s in the hamstrings or the soft tissues, it feels like it could get a little contagious over there. But I don't want to put any bad energy around the Jets fans. They went through enough.
They don't need it
last season, and you know, they've had, you know, political campaigns to think about as well this off season as well. So I don't want to put too much on.
And geez, they've taken out on Danny a lot over on the X, which is great. It's always great to watch.
We love the Jets fans on there. Hey, before you go, Macca, you're saying Howie like makes lots of moves and he's always moving and shaking. What's your thoughts on Jerry and how the off season's been for you guys?
Well, that feels like a shot, but let's.
What do you mean? It's a shot back.
No, this is the most.
Has there been any move? I can't remember.
No. This is the most nihilistic I've seen Cowboys fans, because there's just no activity. There are roster holes galore. Individual decisions like letting Tyron Smith go, wanting to get ahead of that. You know, he's been an amazing player. But, you know, looking at what it took to get him healthy, which is basically not having him practice, how many games he's missed, wanting to get younger at that spot, that in isolation. Not a terrible move, absolutely justifiable. But when you combine it with the fact that you don't have full draft capital, that you're umming and ahhing about what to do at Tyler Smith, the fact that, again, most Cowboys fans in a vacuum, Tyler Biadasz leaving and like not paying him, wanting to upgrade at center, not a bad decision, something that I would be on board with. But you're creating so many roster holes and you don't have the draft capital to replace them in a year that you're supposed to be all in. which was the bad launching point to start with, because that I said it. I go check my Twitter, formerly X, formerly the artist known as Twitter, whatever it is. But I said, do not fall for this. This is the latest version that of Jerry's previous line was, you wouldn't believe the check. I'm paraphrasing here. You wouldn't believe the size of the check I'd write to win another Super Bowl. Well, I mean, technically you weren't lying, because right now the check looks pretty small. They're a bottom three team in terms of cash spending over the past 3 years. So the inactivity whilst allowing roster holes to be created is causing a lot of frustration. It's a very confusing period. And if you are drawing if you want to draw the conclusion that, hey, they just want to get through this season and say, hey, Dak, Mike, give it your best shot. We're not going to flood this free agency with funds. We're not going to give you a war chest here. You guys go at it and you're both off contract and we're going to move on. Okay. Like, that's a justified. If you think that's what they're thinking, I don't think it's a smart move. I don't think it's a smart way of going about it. I don't think it's a great way to maximize your resources. If that's what you've taken away from their activities, I can't fault you for that's what you perceived. But when it comes to Dak as well, the idea of letting Dak Prescott, and we'll see. There's talk, the Cowboys negotiate publicly all the time. They can negotiate quite negatively in the public through the media as well. This could be very much part of that ploy. We'll see if an extension gets done with Dak Prescott. But Dak Prescott leaving, not being extended and being allowed to hit free agent market in 2025, 1 year from now or 11 months from now, whether you're a Dak believer or you think Dak needs to get out of town, that should infuriate you. If you're a Dak believer, you should want him extended. The quicker you get the extension before any other quarterback deals get done, the cheaper it'll be. If you don't think he's the guy, you should be begging them to be trying to facilitate a trade. If not 12 months ago or 6 months ago, now. Because letting...
get something for him.
Whatever you think of Dak in the playoffs, letting a legitimate top 10 quarterback who was a second team All-Pro, and I know like Joe Burrow was hurt, and I know they're also committed. People can put asterisk on if you really want. But letting a second team All Pro quarterback go and getting nothing but maybe a comp pick, wherever that falls on day two or day three, depending how the comp pick formula works, which, you know, is quite often as clear as, you know, Jedi math. That is just a ridiculous return on assets. So yeah, I think justifiably Cowboys fans are very upset from an analytical standpoint, the whole process and the whole strategy does not make a lot of sense. And ultimately, the fact that with the Cowboys, you've got a power structure that involves Jerry, that involves Steven, that involves head coach Mike McCarthy, and involves Will McClay, who is the head de facto head personnel man and the guy running their draft room and the guy who's get credit and responsibility for the drafting success they've had over the past decade. The fact that you've got all that going at once, is it a surprise that perhaps it's not the most congruent, coherent operation at times?
No, I don't think so.
I just wanted to needle me on that.
Well,
Danny just giggles.
I had to go. But is it the all-in comment that you think that is just like, why even make that comment? Like you said, they are looking at...
Yeah, from a media hat standpoint, like I knew what it was straight away. I'm like, I don't believe this.
What are you doing?
Like, I'm not inspired to go pen an article or do a video saying how the Cowboys are going to go all in this offseason. Like, I know what this is, but it's frustrating because I just think it sets an unnecessary narrative and it sets your fans alight and ignites their frustration for no real reason to then walk it back and say, well, all in for us is, you know, signing our own. It's like,
yeah,
it's just noise. And I don't think it helps the locker room. I don't think you're with the conversations and the stuff you've heard about Dak Prescott and his contract and different comments here and there. Like, I don't think that helps your, I don't think it helps your negotiation. And I don't think it helps the relationship between front office. I think we've seen with the Cowboys, negotiations have got unnecessarily negative too often, only for the Cowboys to end up paying sticker price or resetting the market. Anyway, they've lost most of their negotiation. They like to say deadlines make deals. They like to, like, Jerry loves the art of the negotiation. They've lost most of them. They lost the Zeke one. They lost a Marcus Lawrence one. They lost the Zach Martin one. They lost the Dez Bryant one. I said Dak Prescott. They probably lost a couple of Dak Prescott ones. They're about to lose the second one. Like, they're one way or another. Like, they're not actually the ones they've come out of. They thought they came out ahead. They thought they got a good price on Jalen Smith because they did Jalen Smith's deal early. Unfortunately, Jalen Smith's deal aged badly in itself, and then they made a decision to keep him on a roster a certain time, convert some money, which actually made it even worse. And you know how his knee and his health developed. But yeah, it's very confusing. And whilst I can sit there with a cynical hat on, being like, "Well, I didn't believe this all-in stuff from the get-go," I understand why fans of the Cowboys that are used to other people getting after them are now having trouble not getting after each other just out of pure frustration and confusion.
I can always see the carotid artery or the artery just going through the roof here, just feeling it, Danny. That's what I meant. A yes or no, because I feel like we've spoken about the Cowboys enough. Don't you feel like if you do have a bit of a crap season that Mike McCarthy might be in a bit of trouble?
I think Mike McCarthy should have been in trouble the last couple of off seasons. I've been pretty clear about that. I think that Jerry, and I'm not alone in saying this, I think there's an element that, you know, Jerry Jones doesn't want to pay two head coaches at the same time. And I think that's part of why Mike McCarthy's back. I think a move should have been made. I think the issues that Mike McCarthy, you know, 12 wins, yes, for three straight seasons, but you know, Mike McCarthy, you asked for a yes or no answer, so I'll button it up.
Yes, the long yes.
Yeah, long yes. But Mike McCarthy took over a good roster. Mike McCarthy took over a good roster to take the next step that Jason Garrett couldn't. He didn't take over a rebuild. He didn't take over a quarterback hole. He didn't take over, you know, an offensive line that didn't exist. He took over a good roster, a quality roster, to take the next step. You're 4 years in. Have you taken the next step? No. Have you failed the brief? Yes. Why are we continuing on? Particularly, you're carrying this on into Dak Prescott's last season under contract, into a pivotal CeeDee Lamb contract situation, into what are we doing with Micah Parsons? It feels like you're holding on to a decision you could have made already that could have a very negative and turbulent effect on some other massive cornerstone decisions you've got to make for the rest of the team.
We need some playoff wins. That's what I'm hearing.
There's no we here. There's no we here. I am an objective football
journalist. I'm an analyst.
All in all, that was a yes. He could be.
It was.
If you'd like to just fast forward, that's the past 3 minutes.
We can add into the $800 million worth of coaches that are being paid not to coach. It's perfect.
Dead money.
My question before we move on from the Cowboys. Australians, from the 252 colleges that you've gone top to bottom in every single player.
Yeah, sure.
Yes.
What are our Aussies looking at? I've heard a couple of names, Tory Taylor and our big man friend of the show, Thomas Yasmin. Is there any news coming out against any Aussies?
So Thomas Yasmin, it was unfortunate that he was injured in the final season at Utah, and it really took away his ability to put on a showcase here and build on what we saw late in 2022. He did test at the Utah Pro Day. I believe he ran a 4.68 in the 40. I think it was a 1.64-ish 10-yard split. His runs were, like, his testing was pretty solid all around. I was looking at this just before, and I should not have closed the tab. But his three cone would have been around third of those tight ends that tested at the combine. Now, Brock Bowers didn't do all of that at the combine, and he's obviously your number one tight end. So, look, unfortunate for what happened with Thomas Yasmin's last season, because given the athlete that he is and how he picked up in that 22 campaign, there was a real chance for him to put on a showcase and really elevate his draft stock. I will say for Thomas Yasmin, while he's not part of the IPP, the fact that they've expanded that international player allowance for each practice squad during season and that extra spot on the 90-man roster throughout the run-up to that 53-man roster cut-down, that could certainly help someone like him with his internationalness. Totally a word. internationality. So promising that he was able to test and that he's been able to put that on, and we'll just see whether he winds up when we hear about visits or we hear about individual team workouts. Tory Taylor headlines the punter list, and you're hearing people talking about, oh, you know, some teams will have a day two grade on him. And the nice thing about Tory Taylor's story is that it's not just on field where he set records. He's also done incredible stuff off the park as well. But hopefully that adds to the Australian and, we should say, the pro kick representation in the NFL. And then you've got, obviously, the IPP pathway, the International Player Pathway Program that is that's ongoing. We've seen a really fast start to that. You know, Wales on the board, Ireland on the board. I need to check if that's Northern Ireland or Ireland on the board with Charlie Smith and Louis Rees-Sammet, Welsh rugby superstar and flyer, finding their way into rosters already. So we keep an eye on, you know, Jonathan Russell and you know, you spoke to him and Pat Murtagh, and what comes from here. Nice to see Patrick obviously get back in after a year delay after initially landing with Detroit. So look, those are some of the headline names. They're not the only ones, but those are the ones that are going to gain the most early noise. And we see how draft day plays out. We see who's in need of punter help. I do know that there was the Big 12, I want to say, Pro Day at AT&T Stadium in the last week or so, and Jordy Sandy, I believe, was there giving it a launch as well. Credit Johnny from Pro Kick Australia, Johnny PKA, yes, for throwing that one out on social media as well. So there are, we know we consistently have these strong crop of Australian punters. We hope that that continues, the bridge gets broken down between the college and the NFL level, and we see more of them getting their shot there, because like we saw with Lou Headley in his debut season, and looking forward to chatting with Lou again in the next week or so, once given the opportunity, and he had to fight for his opportunity with the Saints, what you can put down there. And a very interesting little special teams room there now in the Saints with you got an Irish accent and Aussie accent in the special teams room, which should, I'm sure, jokes will land with nothing but ease and grace once those dialects meet up with what's going on down in New Orleans.
You'd be happy to know, John, like you said, Johnny throwing out there, spoke to him yesterday for quite a long time. Even he's hard enough to understand. Jordy did trial with the Cowboys.
So yes.
It'll be big for you. And another one, just before we get to your question, Katz, just on the down low, Thomas Yasmin trialing with the Browns, I believe. So just inside knowledge. I hope I was allowed to say that. So we'll see what happens. Katz, over to you.
Well, I mean, if you look at the Cleveland Browns and you look at what their tight end room looks like, as you know, they've certainly dealt with superb athletes there. As I quickly pivot and just make sure the phone doesn't go bananas, but you've got someone like David Njoku playing for the Cleveland Browns, who certainly coming out of college was that rawer athlete prospect at the tight end position, and has blossomed and continued to rise up throughout his career. So the idea of taking, you know, a rawer tight end athlete prospect and developing them shouldn't be totally foreign an idea to a team like the Cleveland Browns. But yeah, we do look at that, and for Yasmin, it is about, you know, health and getting in front of those eyes, because I think with health he certainly can show off that athleticism, and we saw the game-breaking ability at Utah. Like, you, he's breaking off 50-plus yard touchdown runs. He's busting through tackles. And not a surprise if you'd seen his schoolboy rugby highlights, but that was part of his game. But when it translates that well at a matchup, at an athlete matchup position, there's certainly potency there.
Coming from behind Dalton Kincaid as well, who's obviously burst onto the scene. So.
Absolutely.
Good, mate. That is awesome. Yeah. I wanted to know, Loz, any word, or, you know, ear to the ground, any word on teams looking to move up, looking forward to the draft, and then who are going to be the teams that are going to trade off these picks for those guys looking to move up, or the teams, I mean, to move up?
Yeah, the noise starts with the Minnesota Vikings, right? Mm. Every time you pick up a second first round pick, and you have, and I'm a fan of Sam Darnold, I'm a believer in Sam Darnold, but any time that Sam Darnold is your only quarterback on your roster, it's going to raise alarm bells. So I think everyone's going to be looking there.
And do you think they package 11 and 23 and try and get...
It depends what you're trying to get up to. But yeah, if you're trying to get up to 3 or 4, you imagine both those picks and you might have to package that you send, and you might have to send more because you do have to pay the quarterback tax. Mm. If you're looking at, I think there's a clip of Arizona Cardinals GM Monty Ossenfort doing the rounds this morning about how he wheeled and dealed last year when the Cardinals went back, traded out as the Texans came up for Will Anderson, and then the Cardinals moved back up to get their guy, and the extra assets they were able to do and how quickly he moved and the way his brain was working. So there's a viral clip that's gone out on social media. I think Josh Norris tweeted that one out. So the Cardinals are one to watch because we've seen in a small sample size that they do like to move around. They don't need a quarterback with Kyler Murray in stock. Obviously, they could use another receiver, a A1 receiver there. As much as I've got faith in Michael Wilson, I think adding a Marvin Harrison Jr., they currently sit in that four slot there. Marvin Harrison Jr., adding a Malik Nabers. Maybe they're Roma Dunze fans. Adding someone like that. So could we see them try and pull off something similar, or do they want to smooth back a couple of picks? I think there's so many inflection points because you do have the first three teams, obviously quarterback needy with the Chicago Bears, Washington Commanders, and then the New England Jacoby Brissetts. New England, it's interesting. If they're not in love with whoever's sitting there, they can absolutely ride it out another year with Jacoby Brissett. You can move back, you can pick up assets. Yeah, you can stand there and take a supreme receiver if you want, if the phone doesn't ring, but I think the phone would ring. But that's those first three we expect we could see quarterbacks, and then 4-5 where you've got the Cardinals and you've got the Chargers, both quarterbacks in place. That's where you expect to see some action. So I think Jim Harbaugh with the Chargers, fresh out of college football, gives you a little bit of an advantage as a head coach. Obviously, all these teams have scouts watching college football year in, year out, doing legwork on the ground, within programs, all that fun stuff. But from a head coaching standpoint, it's obviously very fresh with Coach Harbaugh there with the Chargers. Would he like to pick up some extra assets to use in this draft while he is so fresh and has such great extra knowledge and feel in liaison with his front office and his scouts to you know, bolster or reload a Chargers team that, you know, has traded off assets, as we've seen Mike Williams gone, we've seen traded and released, and we've seen Keenan Allen gone, and there was all sorts of talk about
Eckler.
Yeah, we've seen Eckler leave. There was all sorts of talk about Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa as well, but they go through some contract redos there. But I think you look at a team like Minnesota. What do the New York Giants do? What do they do? What do they really feel about Daniel Jones? They are on the hook for a little bit now. This year, that'll carry on to a future years as well. Most of the pain comes out of that deal in the first couple of years, the extension, but they're going to feel that. But are they in love with a quarterback here that they'd like to draft? And hey, they sit behind Daniel and say, hey, Daniel, look, you know, prove us wrong. But, you know, we found someone we want to move on with. You know, when you have that separation of a draft pick from the GM and the front office and the head coach that picked him, that can obviously facilitate something like that. So that, because the Giants have such an obvious need at offensive line, they have an offensive need. They have obvious need a wide receiver. They could use defensive help. I don't think that's a pick there. And in my opinion, they have a need a quarterback, whether they feel that. That's another inflection point there. So I think in this draft class, I think there's more bona fide first round grades than you'd usually see. That sounds weird. Most teams will have around 18 to low 20s, 18 to 20 true first round grades per draft class. I know there's 32 picks in the first round. But that's when you're talking about not the number of picks that happen around, but the true graded players in that tier. This year, it seems it's more like somewhere between 22, 23, 24. It's a pretty strong at the top. How deep it goes into day three, we'll see. But given that quality is there and they're bona fide picks, do we see teams wanting to move out of that top 15, top 20 into later in the first round where they feel there might be a tier drop off? Because I do think once you get past those first round grades from like 20 to 60, 65, it's pretty flat. It's really, really good talent. Not flat in a bad way, flat in a consistent way. But yeah, I think the other team that I would consider, and just because they're a wild card and just because they have a new cemented head coach, is I always just wonder what's going on in Las Vegas. I always wonder what's going on with the Raiders. Because I know you can pass on nice things about Aiden O'Connell and you go and bring in a bridge quarterback and
Gardner Minshew Mania, baby.
You got Gardner Minshew there, but I do wonder that there's a lot of people trying to connect Michael Penix there. What round that occurs in, I'll leave up for debate. If that happened in the first round, it's not something I'd be in love with. But what do the Raiders do? Because I think that's very unsettled. And I think there's a lot of positive momentum to how that finished with Antonio Pierce in his first half season campaign taking over. But that's definitely an unresolved issue at quarterback. And with some of the talent, some of the veteran talent moves, like adding Christian Wilkins, you still got Devontae Adams on the roster. It feels like something needs to be added. And it feels like they're not done yet. And could they be a team that they're in and around that Vikings pick? But if the word around the Vikings gets really noisy, do they start to get a little itchy as well? And then we start to see some real fireworks in that top there. But I think because you've got blue chip talent at the top, I think that does promote movement, because I think people will fall in love.
I like it. I like it. It's exciting. I think it makes for an exciting draft day.
We wanted one like last year where it's literally just, oh shit, someone's moved up, or the Texans have moved up, or we like that first hour. It's just crazy.
People thought it was a graphic mistake because, you know, the Texans are picking again.
Yeah.
You know, people were like, oh, they pressed the wrong, you know, the lower third, someone in the truck pressed the wrong logo. That's exactly what
fired for this one. Jesus.
Look, I think four quarter, it hasn't happened before, but QB could go 1, 2, 3, 4. I just finished my proper, like, I've done peripheral study on the quarterbacks, but I did my proper looking at the all 22 for those top four. And there's a lot to love about each of them. There really is. Like, I think I've gone into certain drafts where I've been iffy about this bloke and been proven right, iffy about this bloke, been proven terribly wrong, Josh Allen.
But you it took a couple of years.
But I look back to that class where you had Baker and Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen and Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. And you felt good about some and you were really off others. But getting through those four guys and their tape, there's so much to like. They all have their flaws, yes. But there's so much to enjoy about each four of those guys. McCarthy, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and obviously Caleb Williams there. It's a really fascinating crop. And like I said, it's the type of bunch of passes that there's going to be a lot of falling in love happening.
So just on that, can you hit us with your top four in order?
I should really save this for the Brekkie show, for the NFL Brekkie show on ESPN Australia, YouTube and socials. But I will give you four is, and not far off, but four is JJ McCarthy.
Mm.
Three is Jaden Daniels.
Ooh.
And that's all I'll give you. Because if I gave you one more, then you'd know the other one.
No, that's good. Keep some for yourself.
Yeah, but there's
a little powder dry.
You know, JJ McCarthy is this crisp operator who fires these darts. He's on time. He's smart. Leadership stuff you're hearing is out of this world. It's off. Everyone's championing that he won. And while QB wins might drive us nuts, or you might be for him or against him on the social medias, teams, you're hearing this for smarter people than me, teams value if you won. So you got JJ, and he's very accurate. I think he's got zip on his arm. He's an underrated athlete. He can move. He's tough as nails, smart. You've got Jaden Daniels, who is absolutely explosive as a runner. He has a lovely arm. He can layer throws. He can hit deep balls, especially those deep sideline passes. He's accurate. He's got nimble feet in the, you know, he just sits there lightly in the pocket and he can take off in an instant. If he gets a lane, he scrambles to run more than he scrambles to pass, which is different to some of these other quarterbacks who get on the move looking to pass. He's more of a, hey, if I'm going, I'm going. And you know what? You can knock him for that, but you can also say, hey, you know what? If I saw a gap and I could turn that into 50 plus yards, I'd probably be going too. But a very talented passer of the football, tough, maybe a little too tough at times, because that dude gets in, he gets lassoed, he gets absolutely ragdolled like two or three or four or five or six times a game, and it makes it just pull back for a second. And then, you know, Drake May and Caleb Williams, and I'm not going to say who I've got top there, but talk about creative passes, talk about guys that played behind really, really questionable offensive lines with not the best receiving talent. If you're a Tez Walker fan, a wide receiver out of UNC, I'm sorry, I'm not. I see a day three guy there. But creative, big arms, improvisers who save plays with their legs, dual threats in their own different ways. And can hit every single blade of grass from all sorts of different platforms. It's a lot of fun at quarterback. So whilst it's not fun to need a quarterback, it can be fun to land one of these guys.
I'll see if I can get that number one out of you just a slightly different way. With Caleb Williams, he's, I think you kind of touched on a little bit there, but the win-loss record going into the last season, are teams taking that into consideration? You know, like the likes of McCarthy who went all the way and, you know, he obviously had the team around him and things like that, but you're not necessarily going to have that team around you when you head into the NFL. So does the win-loss, you know, like it was 3 out of the last 6 or something he went down, you know, does that come into it a little bit or not really?
I mean, I think they prefer you have, you know, they like winnability, but you look at what did you contribute to the loss? You know, what was your performance within that? And whilst quarterback is different to every other single position and so much is put on them, I think when you draft and you study and you draft the traits first, you draft the tape first, not the win-loss record. And that's why we've seen, you know, Kellen Moore was not drafted in the first round despite his ridiculous record at Boise State. And the traits with Caleb Williams are so tantalizing. And I think the biggest thing, I think if you saw those guys making consistent, calamitous decisions with their creative, you know, second phase playability that wasn't working and directly contributing to losses, okay, that's one thing. But the fact that those guys save so many plays despite and because of often the piecemeal football roster around them, the piecemeal offensive line or weaponry at the skill positions, I mean, that counts for more. And you will see that, you know, you can still have phenomenal tape in a loss. And it's an interesting one because I think from an offensive line standpoint, and particularly with and I don't like to knock players for having really good receivers because you could do that for Joe Burrow, you know, who had Justin Jefferson and who had, who's that guy that plays in with him in Cincinnati? Oh, he had Ja'Marr Chase. Like, you know, you have, he had another, you know, high, you know, day two, I believe, receiver in Terrace Marshall, who Joe Burrow was operating with back at LSU. I don't like pinging people for working with good weapons. I do think it's important to look at their offensive line. And I think from what I've watched with what Michigan were rolling out there and what LSU was rolling out there for JJ McCarthy and Jaden Daniels, respectively, very different from the, hey, Drake May and Caleb Williams just caught the snap and how are two rushes in their lap already and how did they just hit a first down pass? It's all part of it. And you need to look through it. You know, what reads are they making? How are they adapting to pressure? How are they adapting to adversity? How are they taking advantage of opportunities? How do they operate when it's clean? Are they taking wins that are there? Are they pushing it too often? So winning matters and you want to see more wins than losses, but the tape and the traits is what comes first for me.
So the Bears are taking.
Do you want me to tell you? Look, it doesn't mean it's who I've got number one overall, but I absolutely think the Bears are taking Caleb Williams. It doesn't mean he's who I've got as QB1.
General consensus guy.
I'm not breaking any news there.
No, you're not. Damn it. Danny boy.
I'm good. Loz absolutely hit the nail on the head for me. He's answered all my questions without me even asking.
No, I haven't.
So good.
Not a chance I've answered all your questions.
Well, Cass, do you want to finish us off then, mate? Because I know we all have families and Loz, we could have you talking about this for 2.5 hours.
I had just a fun little one. You do a fair bit of research. Is there anyone that you really like, that you're not hearing a lot of noise about, that might be a little smoky for another Mr. Irrelevant type Brock Purdy, really late pick gone good? The Jets have got 256 and 257, so they could double down with Mr.'s Irrelevant. But is there anyone that you sort of think you really like the look of, but you're, strangely enough, you're not hearing a lot of noise about? Or is it, it's really hard to predict who's going to go that late?
I think QBs... Like I am now getting into more of deep. So like I've done peripheral stuff on the likes of, like I've watched enough Washington games to see a bunch of Michael Penix Jr. Same with Bo Nix when I was looking at his receiver, Troy Franklin, I believe. So I think, and I don't think they're late enough to fit that bill. I think there's some people out there and I have not, this is one that I'll say, I think there's some fans of the Tulane quarterback, Michael Pratt. But again, I don't think that's that late in the piece. I think that's a little earlier. I think that's someone who could come off the board somewhere on day 2 or early day 3. one of those kind of fringe top 100 guys. The fascinating one for me, and maybe I'm not answering your question totally here, when it comes to quarterback, is Spencer Rattler. Because he's been in so many of our lives, from TV specials and QB1 and, you know, Netflix, and it was a very strong persona that we were exposed to with Spencer Rattler off the bat. He's been a high prospect. I mean, he throws a lovely ball. He does some really nice quarterback things. And is he the type of player that has enough X factor that where he lands, could he be the bolter from the pack out of that? Again, I don't think this is a 256 player, but we're talking so much about those top four, and then honestly, Bo Nix and literally just said his name, and now it's deserted me. That's there. My left-handed friend Michael Penix. How can I do that to my fellow lefty? We hear so much about those top four, and then the next two. That is Rattler, someone that someone is going to love the arm talent on. So that's certainly one at the quarterback position. If we were going elsewhere though, across the board, at different positions, someone that would jump out that I probably have higher than other players. I mentioned Troy Franklin. He's someone that some people have as high as wide receiver 4. Some people have outside of the top 10 at wide receiver. I have him as wide receiver 5, who I'm a big fan of. And again, that's not a crazy late name. There's some intriguing running backs, and I'm actually pretty high on Braylon Allen, who is just a trucking bulldozer, about 240 odd pounds. There's some people think he has some ball security issues. He had 2 high profile fumbles against Ohio State, but throughout watching the rest of his tape, he's very solid, very, very bursty for someone that big with that type of trucking ability. But if absolute pet cat, as I like to say, absolute favorite, there's a linebacker out of UNC who named Cedric Gray, who is smooth, who is comfortable in space. I think he's a 3-down linebacker. I think there's other names there. You got Peyton Wilson, who's fantastic out of NC State, but has injury issues and red flags. Unfortunately had shoulder issues and knee issues. You got Edgerrin Cooper out of Texas A&M, who maybe is a linebacker who sneaks into the first round. Very imposing. I think he carries himself broader and bigger than even he measured in at, but there's a lot to like about his explosive nature as a linebacker. But Cedric Gray out of rocks number 23 out of North Carolina, or did he rock 33? But that North Carolina blue, you start seeing 23 run around and you start thinking about somebody else that rocked that number way back when out of Chapel Hill. But he's a linebacker that I think I've probably got tagged as pet cat there. It's not a top heavy linebacker class, and it's pretty thin. So if you need linebacker help, like some franchises that are represented here today, not a great draft for
him. He's
one that I think could bolt and really provide some massive value, perhaps on day two, and someone that we see linebackers, all pro linebackers emerge from that range, whether it was Shaq Leonard, in his absolute prime, the Indianapolis Colts, where it's Fred Warner, Dre Greenlaw running around for the San Francisco 49ers. There's so many examples of it. I believe Navarro Bowman back in the day was a second-round pick. Sean Lee was a second-round pick. Just threw that one in. That got to get in there. that range, we don't always see those first-round linebackers leap out and be the best of their class. So Cedric Gray is one that I've got my eyes on. But I know you're asking about quarterbacks, but I just had to pivot a little bit.
No, it's all right. It's a tricky one to nail down. I do have one quick final one, Maka. Just a quick one from the chat, Loz. If you quickly give your thoughts on this. So a proposed trade of JJ to the Chargers for pick 5, therefore giving the Vikings 5, 11, and 23. Feeling like the Chargers are a bit obviously receiver needy. What are your thoughts there real quickly?
Minnesota Vikings send Justin Jefferson
to the Chargers for pick 5.
Chargers send pick 5.
Mm.
Obviously, this means the Chargers are the ones that have to pay Justin Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
And
they weren't willing to pay, or they didn't have the money to pay him. So how are they going to pay him?
Cap issue, didn't they?
They have cap issue. They've created space, though, with all their moves.
True.
So it's not entirely unfeasible. And remember that when you do sign someone to an extension, it's not often the first year. That the first year is when you give out the cash. It's not when you give out the cap hit, the way that all that is structured. I would do that if I am the Chargers. I would not do that if I was the Vikings. As much as Roma Dunze, Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, whichever way you have it stacked, they are outstanding talents. This isn't the Mike Williams. Was it Mike Williams and John Ross that both went in the same draft inside the top 10? This isn't that. These guys are absolute. Look, as we stand here today, who knows how the NFL plays out, but these guys are bona fide, blue chip studs at the wide receiver position. A joy to watch, but Justin Jefferson is as sure a thing as it can be. And that's the type of player I want to build around. That's the type of player I want to pay. So if I was Minnesota and I've set up quite a good infrastructure for whoever my next quarterback is, whether it's someone in this draft, whether it's Sam Darnold, whether it's someone in the 2025 draft, I'm not breaking up Hockenson, Addison, Jefferson, and a pretty talented offensive line, particularly when healthy. I'm not breaking that environment up just to allow to avoid paying someone that I should be happy that I get to pay.
Yeah,
I don't know why the Vikings wouldn't try and trade up to get a QB that's going to actually be able to service those guys instead of...
Yeah.
You're just trying to get out.
I would have, but with the Packers.
The question was from the chat, I've got to say.
Listen, when Sam Darnold starts slinging it, you know, he's going to...
Look out.
I think he's one that you might have got wrong back in the day.
He's one that I can't.
You've come on here a couple of times and really beat his drum, but his drum's got a few bloody holes in it, I think.
Yeah. It's known in one of my long-time home fantasy leagues that got a little Sam Darnold problem. He's affectionately known as the Peacock in that league, I haven't been able to quit that one.
No.
Nah, beautiful, mate. Like I said, we could talk to you for 2.5 hours about this, and I look forward to watching the Brekkie show and seeing who you actually want to go number one. That'll be very, very interesting. We can't thank you enough for giving up your time to come on. The only problem I do have with you coming on is you obviously did not get the brief about wearing your team's Any Given Sunday shirt. I can't wait to see you rocking a Dallas one day, mate.
Yes, well, when my team merits it, I shall do so.
I did say, and you said something about salary cap malleable teams. I did have to Google what malleable means once you actually said that. So, once their salary cap malleable, we'll send you one.
We're all out here learning.
It's a delight joining you guys. It's a delight throwing gentle barbs here and there. I think one of them that I actually think I got away with, one of them might have gone over the head delightfully of one member of the crew, but I'm just not gonna say anything. I'm not giving anything away, but that just feels like got one on the board there. So no, always fun joining you guys. We could talk forever, but let's try and be responsible members of society and families today. But I look forward to chatting to you guys again. Always fun coming on and throwing all sorts of names up on the board.
Absolutely, mate. Much appreciated. And we'll definitely be logging in and checking what you've got draft day. And where do you have anything on draft day? Like, what's the plans?
So the working plan is now, me and Phil Murphy just ironing and locking things down, but we're looking to do day before, bit of a draft primer. Calling it mocking the draft, not a mock draft, but mocking
like
the draft.
It.
So it could be some giggles, really leaning into just the ridiculous noise and smoke screen fest that it is in those hours and days leading up. So that's the plan for the day before. And draft day, which working that on now, live reacts, perhaps even some live pick reacts later in the first round. But once again, time zones are fun to deal with. We're happy to do it. And we're just ironing those things out right now. But day before and day of, ESPN Australia socials and YouTube will be live up and running and making terrible, terrible proclamations about the quarterbacks. That's what we're here for.
Love it.
As long as you don't get held to them, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Beautiful, mate. And we appreciate you getting into Phil Murphy's ears about getting him on the show as well. That'd be great. Well, so we'll speak to you soon, probably straight after the draft, and we'll speak about it again, mate.
Beautiful. Looking forward to it, guys.
Thanks, Loz.
Cheers, Loz.